From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Thursday, May 28, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel. Federal officers and Charlotte-Mecklenburg police said Wednesday that they've arrested 10 people and moved to seize a troubled hotel near the Sugar Creek I-85 interchange. U.S. Attorney for the Western District of North Carolina, Russ Ferguson, said the Garden Inn was an open-air market for guns and drugs like fentanyl and cocaine.
The Garden Inn has become this rampant and pervasive hub of drug trafficking and gun trafficking activity. It has been a problem hotspot that is causing problems throughout the Charlotte community.
In the last 2.5 years, CMPD has received 590 calls for service to the hotel. He said the hotel's head of security is one of those facing charges, and that the security team at the hotel is behind much of the criminal activity. After a 6-month undercover operation, authorities are also trying to take possession of the Garden Inn. The Sugar Creek I-85 area has been described as a crime hotspot for years because of the cluster of low-priced hotels that give people cover for criminal activity. Vi Lyles could remain Charlotte's mayor past her June 30th retirement date if city council members can't agree on who will replace her and finish the last 17 months of her term. Steve Harrison has this report.
Lyles sent an email to council members Wednesday afternoon saying she would continue serving, quote, until my successor has been appointed. Council members on Tuesday night approved a schedule for picking the new mayor, with applications opening on Tuesday and a pick to be made on June 22nd. But it's possible council members will struggle to find someone who can get a majority of 6 votes. One reason, there's expected to be a handful of candidates running for mayor in 2027, and some council members are wary of giving a potential challenger an advantage of being the incumbent mayor. Mayor Pro Tem James Mitchell already said he wants the job. He said he won't run for mayor if he's picked. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
Employees in North Carolina's executive branch are now banned from profiting off their knowledge on platforms like Kalshi and Polymarket. Adam Wagner reports from Raleigh.
Governor Josh Stein signed an executive order Wednesday barring executive branch employees and appointees from placing bets based on information gained at work. Stein, a first-term Democrat, says he does not know of any state employees who have placed such bets. Still, he says the policy will boost the public's trust in government.
People need to have faith that their public servants are working on their behalf, not leveraging their knowledge unfairly to win a bet and make money.
North Carolina joins at least 4 other states with similar policies. Stein's order does not extend to employees of the General Assembly, other Council of State agencies, the state judicial branch, or the University of North Carolina system. The governor is encouraging leaders of those agencies to adopt a similar policy. Adam Wagner, North Carolina Newsroom, Capital Bureau.
York County, South Carolina is considering a moratorium on new data center projects. A county planning committee voted Tuesday to recommend a 9-month moratorium while officials review zoning and land use rules. York County residents have raised concerns for months about the facility's noise and water and power use. The proposal now heads to the York County Council, which would need to hold a public hearing before approving the moratorium. Disgraced insurance executive Greg Lindbergh has been sentenced to 12 years in federal prison for his role in a multi-billion-dollar fraud and bribery scheme. Federal prosecutors say Lindbergh siphoned more than $2 billion from insurance companies he controlled and later tried to bribe North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey as regulators began investigating his companies. The scandal also ensnared former North Carolina Republican Party Chair Robin Hayes, who resigned in 2019 after pleading guilty to lying to the FBI. Prosecutors say thousands of policyholders are still owed more than $1 billion. A former adult video store employee is suing former North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, accusing him of abusing the legal system during last year's race for governor. WRAL in Raleigh reports Lewis Love Money says Robinson falsely sued him for defamation after Money publicly claimed Robinson frequented his adult video store years before entering politics. Robinson later acknowledged on a podcast that some of the allegations about his pornography use were true. Money is now seeking reimbursement for legal expenses tied to the earlier lawsuit. A dance performance at the Mint Museum in Charlotte Wednesday night celebrated the African diaspora around the globe and right here. Elvis Meneyese has more.
A group of refugee and immigrant kids from Tanzania and the Democratic Republic of Congo dressed in African attire as they performed. Kimberly Nelson is with the African think tank, the group behind the Africa Day celebration.
It is a significant holiday that started with the OAU, the African Union, and it is where we are recognizing the Africans, people of African descent, the contributions that we have made in society.
Ramona Holloway is with the Mint Museum.
We want to be a place for art and connection, and we want to weave together people in this community to celebrate and uplift each other.
Last year, Mecklenburg County issued a proclamation recognizing Africa Day to celebrate the contributions of Africans across the region. Elvis Meneyese, WFA News.
The Carolina Hurricanes are on the cusp of reaching the Stanley Cup Finals for the third time in franchise history after a 4-0 drubbing of the Montreal Canadiens last night. The Canes scored 3 goals in under 3 minutes in the first period to go up 3-1 in the best-of-seven series. Head coach Rod Brind'Amour spoke after the win.
I mean, I think we're working hard, and we're, you know, we guys are in sync, which helps. And, you know, like I say, it doesn't always work out, but I like the way we went about our business tonight. So when you play like that, that's obviously what it looks like.
Game 5 is Friday night in Raleigh. South Carolina's effort to redraw its congressional map appears to be over, at least for now. State senators voted Tuesday not to advance a new map that would have eliminated South Carolina's only majority black congressional district. The proposal was backed by President Trump and had passed the state house. But several Republicans ultimately joined Democrats in opposition, saying it was too late to make changes with early voting already happening. Congressman James Clyburn's district would have been dramatically reshaped under the proposal. He spoke with our Nick Delacanal.
Congressman, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, this proposal would have directly affected your district, but I was struck by something that you told reporters after the vote. You said Republican senators weren't joining Democrats so much as maintaining their principles. Why do you see this vote that way?
Well, we have certain principles in this country guided by the Constitution of the United States. And 2 years ago, this district went before the Supreme Court. And the United States Supreme Court said it was, in fact, constitutionally drawn. But the White House decided, the heck with all of that. And we want to get rid of the majority six congressional district. Well, in the first place, my district is not majority black. It is a 45% African-American district, and according to the census, 43% white. So where is that is a racial gerrymander? So I think that what these senators were doing was standing by the principles of redistricting as well as the Constitution, and it's not anything to do with Jim Clyburn.
Now, supporters of this map said that they were simply trying to strengthen Republican representation in Washington, but you've said these efforts are part of a new Jim Crow and an effort to dilute black voting power.
Because that's what it is. I'm telling you, I started delving into politics when I was 8 years old. I know racism when I see it. I know it when I hear it. I know it when I feel it. And I've been part of the efforts to desegregate this country ever since 1954 Brown v. Board of Education decision. And so this is not about Republican partisanship. This is about MAGA. And for people to pretend that it's something else, it is a bunch of ignorance.
This effort was part of a broader national push by President Trump to have Republican-led states redraw districts ahead of the midterms. What does it say to you that Republican senators in South Carolina ultimately resisted that pressure?
Because fundamentally, South Carolinians have a tremendous, very broad, independent streak. And they do not wish to be dictated to. They do not wish to be made pawns. And the majority of this Senate, and a lot of them, decided to go public with it.
That said, this fight probably isn't over. South Carolina leaders have already suggested that they could revisit redistricting in future elections. What would you want to see happen next? And what lessons do you think lawmakers should take away from how this unfolded?
I want to see the legislature open up a map room. Tell the public, if you're interested in what is happening to your community, come in and take a look at the map room. That's the way we've done it before. And the process took 2 years the last time. Here's a process you're supposed to take 2 weeks because it's coming from on high.
Now, finally, you are seeking an 18th term. After all these decades in politics, did anything about this episode surprise you?
No, a lot of it disappointed me. But no, I wasn't surprised at anything. South Carolinians carry with them a certain amount of decency and respect for each other. That's why I was not surprised at the state Senate doing what it did, because it was a very undignified way to do things, and they resented that.
Congressman James Clyburn represents South Carolina's 6th Congressional District. Congressman, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
There was a raucous public hearing before Charlotte City Council this week. It was over data centers and a possible 150-day pause on the development of them. The Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter's Ashley Fay was there and spoke to our Marshall Terry for our segment, Bizworthy.
Remind me first what data centers are and why they seem to be popping up everywhere all of a sudden.
Data centers have actually been around for as long as we've had digital infrastructure and the internet, but I think they've really become more in the public conscience because they're getting a lot bigger, they're getting a lot more powerful. Basically, they're just these one-story usually facilities that house servers and other infrastructure to power all the things we do on our phones and all the digital aspects of our world.
Now, at this public hearing this week, more than 30 people spoke. What made it raucous, and what did the people who supported data centers, a small number, say?
A lot of folks kind of worried about, you know, will this mean I'm going to have a higher power bill? You know, we are in a drought currently, so the water consumption use of data centers was brought up as a point of contention with some folks. Some people brought up the fact that there's a data center proposed in East Charlotte, and, you know, where are these facilities locating? Are they near neighborhoods? Are they near nature preserves? About 5 people spoke either neutrally or against the moratorium. A lot of these folks were part of the real estate industry. They made the point that most folks today are using digital infrastructure and AI, things that data centers power, and this is becoming critical infrastructure.
What comes next?
There will be a vote at the June 8th City Council meeting on the 150-day temporary moratorium. And the point of the moratorium is to give the city time to develop policy and regulations.
Sticking with council for a moment, it recently approved a rezoning petition for part of the Manor Theater Shopping Center site on Providence Road. What are the plans there?
The longtime owner of the property, Eastern Federal Corps, is working with a Dallas-based group to build up to 130 residential units and about 35,000 square feet of retail space. This will all be new development, so what's currently on the site is expected to be demolished. This was a sticking point with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Historic Landmarks Commission, which noted that the building that contained the Manor Theater is, while not officially historic, it has a lot of things from the 1940s and building facade and architectural features that they would like to see preserved. The developers have said they will try to incorporate some of those design considerations in the new development, but certainly this is a new chapter for the site. The theater closed in 2020.
On to some medical development news now. Novant Health is building a freestanding emergency room. Where? And are those common?
Looks like Novant wants to build this ER at 6400 Fairview Road, which is right behind the original Pancake House at Sharon Corners at Fairview and Sharon Roads. We are seeing this trend kind of more broadly, not specific to Novant, but across healthcare, of more freestanding emergency rooms in Charlotte and elsewhere. I couldn't tell you exactly what's driving the trend, but I have noticed more of these types of applications are popping up.
Finally, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library is resuming its search for a new CEO. It's been more than a year since the previous CEO stepped down. What's taking so long?
I don't know that I have the answer for that necessarily, but it is interesting that there is no permanent CEO in place with everything Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library is doing right now, especially its, of course, new main library branch in Uptown Charlotte. That's been underway now for a while. It's expected to open sometime next year. But the library tells us that they are planning to hold initial candidate interviews for the CEO position next month.
Okay, Ashley, thank you.
Thank you so much, Marshall.
That's Ashley Fay of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter. Support for Bizworthy comes from the Law Office of Robertson & Associates and Central Piedmont Community College.
And for Thursday, May 28th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.